We are just a couple weeks away from Easter. Holy Week is just a couple weeks from now, the week that marks everything that Christianity is about. This is the last big miracle that Jesus did before he ended up arrested, before he ended up on the cross, before he ended up in a tomb. There's a lot to this story. There's a lot in it. And so as I go through it, I just invite you, if you have a pen and paper close by or coloring utensils or whatever it is, so that you can engage as you need to engage, please feel free to do whatever you have to do. And so I'm starting reading from John 11, verses 1-3. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, in the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother, Lazarus, was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus. Lord, he whom you love is ill. Now I want to pause there for a second to notice that they didn't actually ask him to come. Notice that what they said was, Lord, he whom you love is ill. See, they don't have to ask him to come. He's their friend. He knows what's needed. It's implicit in that response. Probably Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were probably Jesus' best friends that he had. He spent a great deal of time at their home. And so when they sent a message to him and they said, listen, Lazarus is really sick, he knew what that meant, because we all know what that meant. It's what we do when someone we love is sick and probably dying. We call in the family. If you want to see him alive again, is kind of what they're saying. You have to come now. You have to come right now. And if you're the one on the receiving end of the call, some of us have been on the receiving end of that call, then you know what you do. You call your boss, you rent a car, you hop on the next available flight, you race to the hospital room so that you'll make it on time. This is what Mary and Martha, I think, expected when they sent Jesus that said, Lord, this friend of yours, this one that you love, is ill. But when Jesus heard it, now we're in verse 4, when Jesus heard it, he said this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it's for God's glory, so that the Son of God, meaning himself, may be glorified through it. Well, that's incredibly hopeful, don't you think? Don't worry about it, he's saying. This illness really isn't as bad as you think it is. Yes, he's sick, but he's not going to die. And I'm the Son of God, and I know these things. This is all about God doing something really, really cool that'll end up with Jesus looking really, really cool. That's excellent. That's extraordinary. Accordingly, though, Jesus loved Mary and her sister and Lazarus. After hearing that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Probably was up to something important. If he really didn't think it was as bad as it was, it makes sense. Then, after waiting 2 days, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." And the disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going to go there again?" This happened, if you flip over a page in your Bible or over to chapter 10, there's a story there that's worth reading. It's a story about, essentially, Jesus is doing the miracles that Jesus does. Jesus is busy with things, and the religious types are divided about Jesus. They're seeing the miracles, they're hearing the teachings, and some of it was really awful to their ears. He was disobeying some of the most sacred laws. Some of them were sure that Jesus was claiming to be just like, or even to be God. There was nothing worse that Jesus could have done. We call that blasphemy. It was the worst possible thing that Jesus could have done. And because of that, they were mad at him. They were really mad at him. They were so mad that they picked up rocks to stone him and hopefully in their minds to kill him. But Jesus and his disciples got away. It wasn't time yet for any of that to happen. And so now in chapter 11, here's Jesus. He's escaped from that almost certain death time. And now here he is, telling his disciples, hey, let's go back there. The disciples say to him, Rabbi, the Jews there, they were just trying to stone you, and you're going to go there again? So Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them. This is a weird little proverb for Jesus to quote here. But it seems that what he's trying to say is that they don't have to worry about going back to Judea. They don't have to worry about the people who had previously tried to stone him to death. Probably he's intending some kind of parallel between the light of day and God's will. In other words, it's like he's saying in response to the disciples' justified concern about going back to the place where Jesus was very recently almost killed, Jesus says to them, don't worry about that. We're solidly in the center of God's plan. We'll be fine. And so after saying this, he told them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to awaken him. And the disciples said to him, Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he'll be all right. Well, pause again. Can you imagine what it was like to be one of Jesus' disciples? I mean, we're all Jesus' disciples, but one of Jesus' disciples right there with the living, breathing Jesus. They had to be afraid by this point. Everyone knew that they were Jesus' disciples. If Jesus was arrested or stoned to death or both, they likely weren't going to fare much better. If Lazarus is getting better, why take the risk? Why go now after the worst has passed, which is obviously had if Lazarus is just sleeping now? Jesus, however, we're at verse 13, if you're following along, Jesus had been speaking about Lazarus' death, but they thought he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And he continued, for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. I think the disciples may have been beginning to suspect that Jesus was going to do something really spectacular. And so Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, even though we may die with him. It's great. It's so dramatic in what he says. And yet true as well. They very well could have died with him. Now, maybe they didn't suspect any kind of spectacular miracle was waiting in the wings. Maybe they just knew that even death was better than being separated from Jesus. Sometimes I wish that I had that kind of faith where there was absolutely nothing in my life that would stop me from being with Jesus. That even death would be better than being separated from Jesus. Now, regardless of any of that, they all went off. And we have no idea what the journey was like. We have no idea who they ran into on the road. All we know is that the next thing that happened in the story is that they had arrived. And so we read in verse 17, when Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. That is a long time. Remember, this is the first century. Jewish people didn't embalm their dead. There was no preserving of the body. He'd been dead long enough for his body to start becoming pretty disgusting. Looking at the timeline, Lazarus had probably died very soon after, or possibly even before, the messenger got to Jesus in the first place. Bethany, where Lazarus and his sisters lived, was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away. And many of the Jews had come to Mary and Martha to console them about their brother. This was normal. For a full 7 days following a burial, people would come from all over to be with the family in their grief. Mary and Martha would have been busy receiving all these people in their home. This is still a common practice today. All the people coming and bringing food and bringing meals and sitting Shiva with the family. But then when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and she met him while Mary stayed at home to keep receiving the people. And Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. That is such a great statement of faith. It's not totally surprising given what good friends Jesus was with this family. They'd seen him heal all sorts of people and do all sorts of miracles. There was no question that Jesus could have healed Lazarus, who was probably his best friend. And I think that must have made it so much worse for Martha and for Mary too. A bit later in verse 32, when Mary finally gets to Jesus, she says exactly the same thing as her sister said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. I wonder how many of us resonate with those words. Lord, if you'd been here. Lord, he was your best friend. Why weren't you here? Jesus, we needed you. Where were you? I can't think of any better words to describe the wilderness, the place of absence, of fear, of wandering and hopelessness. Jesus, where were you? God, where are you? These words of lament, the words of suffering that are turned into a prayer, they're the heartbeat of God's people feeling off kilter or out of balance. They're the cry of the heart faced with the very real possibility that life and death and everything in between is out of control. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. I want us to pause here for a moment. And I want to invite you to imagine yourself with Mary and Martha as they stand before Jesus, knowing he could have saved their brother. And as you imagine yourself in that place, what's your prayer? I'm going to pause for a minute so that you can say your own prayer. Lord, if you'd been here, and then you fill in the blank. Or maybe your prayer is more like this. Lord, where were you? And so I'm just going to give you kind of a minute or two. Lord, if you'd been here. Or Lord, where were you? And so just take the next couple of minutes and let that be your prayer. There's a really great prayer in Psalm 44 that reads like this. Awake, Lord. Why do you sleep? Rouse yourself. Do not reject us forever. Why do you hide your face and forget our misery and oppression? We are brought down to the dust. Our bodies cling to the ground. Rise up and help us. Rescue us because of your unfailing love. I like that bit at the end, the last phrase, because of your unfailing love. After Martha said to Jesus, if you've been here, my brother would not have died. She continued in verse 22, but even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. It sounds to me like the same words of the psalmist, because of your unfailing love. It's very similar. Martha says, but even now, even though you're here now and Lazarus, my brother, your friend has been buried for 4 days, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. This is what faith is. It's Thomas saying to the other disciples, okay, he's going to the plaque, back to that place where people wanted to kill him and likely us not that long ago. Let's go with him anyways, even if it means we may die with him. It's Martha saying, I know you could have healed him if you'd been here. And even though he's been buried for 4 days, and even though I know it's impossible, I also know that God will give you whatever you ask. This is faith. It's what makes our suffering, our pain, our fear, the wilderness, survivable. It's the difference between hope and despair. Jesus said to Martha in response to her incredible statement of faith, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And she said to him, yes, Lord, I believe you are the Messiah. You are the Son of God. You are the one coming into the world. And when she had said this, she went back and she called her sister Mary and told her privately, the teacher, by which she means Jesus, is here and is calling for you. And when Mary heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at that place where Martha had met him. And the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary got up quickly and go out. And they followed her because they thought she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. I love that this statement is included in this story. I think that sometimes when we're hurting and God doesn't seem to be anywhere helpful, it's really easy to think that he doesn't actually care. It's easy to read Jesus' decision to not go immediately to Lazarus as Jesus not caring, as Jesus having bigger things to worry about, as God having bigger things to deal with. But here, right here with Mary in front of him, we see that he's deeply moved, that he's greatly disturbed in spirit. And when Mary stands in front of him, surrounded by the crowd of mourners weeping for her loss, Jesus is right in it with her. He said, "Where have you laid him?" And they said to him, "Lord, come and see." And Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Really does kind of seem to be the question of the day. Then Jesus, again, greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying across it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." And Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there's a stench because he's been dead for 4 days." A stench, I think, is a little bit of an understatement after 4 days. And Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Now, I don't know if you remember, like, a million years ago on the first Sunday of Lent, when I introduced our Lent theme of wilderness, do you remember that I talked about hope? I talked about Schrodinger's cat, which is a thought experiment in which a cat is in a box, and until you open the box, you have no idea if the cat is dead or alive. And faith, I talked about, is choosing to believe that the cat is alive, despite having no evidence. It's about hope. And I think that's what's going on here in front of Lazarus's tomb. Even though they all knew Lazarus was dead and pretty well along the road of decomposition, when Jesus told them to take away the stone blocking the entrance to the tomb, they did it. That in itself, to me, is one of the most extraordinary acts of faith in the whole Bible. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always, that you hear me. But I've said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out. His hands and his feet were bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." This is why Jesus didn't rush to be with Mary and Martha. This is why Jesus got there late. God hadn't forgotten Martha and Mary and their brother. God wasn't punishing them or ignoring them. He wasn't deaf to their cries or unmoved their suffering. It was just there was something bigger going on. Death was being defeated. Indeed, this story foreshadows the next story. In this story, one person's death is overcome. In the next story, all death is overcome.